Welcome back to the Wise Divine Woman, where I help you go from fed up to faith fueled, helping you to become the wise divine woman that you are called to be. Today, I have Megan Lyons with me, and she is a holistic doctor in holistic medicine. Yes.
That will be coming soon. Currently, I'm a board certified clinical and holistic nutritionist. The
Perfect.
Doctorate will take another 6 months or so.
I love it. And I love that you've gone the extra steps. There's and board certified and understanding that nutrition is important and it's complex. And the more you learn, the more you learn, right? It's just
yes.
So fascinating. And today I've invited you on to really talk about a topic we haven't talked about, is the thyroid. And how
yes.
is that really playing a big role with perimenopause and menopause? And how we can support that, Megan. And I thank you again so much for joining me today on this really important topic. So tell me, how did you start your journey into the nutrition field?
Yes, well, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here and thrilled to spend some time with the audience. Although we can't see them, we feel their presence. As for me, I started in this world kind of stumbling into it unintentionally, like I think many of us do. Mm-hmm. I studied economics in undergrad. I got my MBA. I was doing management consulting. So I was really not in the nutrition world at all. But I was great at charging hard on the outside and not great at taking care of myself on the inside. And that was fine for a couple of years until it wasn't. I started really falling apart on the inside. I had hormonal issues at the age of 26. I went to a doctor who said, "Your hormones are lower than the postmenopausal women that I see, and there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to take pills for the rest of your life." And that just felt wrong for me. I am not totally opposed to medication. But at 26, when I knew I was driving my body into the ground, I knew that wasn't the answer for me right then. So that started my journey of really self-exploration and diving into the nutrition research and understanding adrenals and the symphony of hormones that we'll talk about, like thyroid and all of that. And once I felt the power of nutrition and holistic health for myself, I just could not turn back. So I had to share it with others. That was January. Well, that was not January, but I ended up opening the business in January of 2014. So about 10 years now, and it is just a dream. I love it so much.
I bet you get to meet so many women. I like myself.
Yes.
It is the pleasure, or it's a pleasure to come alongside women on their
yes.
health journey, because it's incredible experience to be part of that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love the way you phrase it, to be part of it, because I never take the credit for making the change. The client always does all of the work. I would eat for all my clients if I could. I would sleep for them. I would exercise for them, but I can't. So I'm
right.
just coming alongside them, as you said. That was a perfect phrase.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And their joy. I mean, it's a very compassionate
yes.
culture, really. So,
yes.
Yeah. So thyroidism, tell me about it and how is it playing a role?
Yes.
Yeah,
Well, yes, absolutely. The thyroid is a very small gland. For those, I ask many clients, where is your thyroid? And they don't even know where in the body it is. It's around your neck area. The thyroid gland looks like a butterfly. So it's a very beautifully shaped gland. And it secretes hormones that control so much of of many daily aspects of life. So everything from temperature control to hair growth to metabolism to even some mood health and some digestive impact, things like that. And it works in conjunction with all of the other hormones in the body. So it is not operating alone. We think, oh, I'm having trouble losing weight. That must be my thyroid. I hear that all the time. And maybe that's part of it. But really, when the thyroid is experiencing issues, it impacts all of the other hormones in the body, which are shifting and changing during menopause. So you mentioned before we were recording that you think of the thyroid as the conductor. I have a similar orchestra analogy that I'd love to share, which is the thyroid is the violinist. And so if the violinist all of a sudden just goes rogue, the violinist starts playing very loud or very fast or something like that, then what will the other members of the orchestra do? They'll say, okay, the cellist might say, oh, wow, the violinist is going crazy. So I'm going to play louder to try to cover up the violinist. Or I'm going to just stop playing for a while to give the violinist a solo because clearly they know something I don't know. Or I'm going to try to speed up with the violinist, something like that. And that's how all of our other hormones are reacting to each other. So whether it's the menopausal transition that starts it, or it's an autoimmune condition that starts it, or whatever, all these hormones are working together.
That is a beautiful analogy. Exactly, right? Am I catching up? Am I slowing down? Are they playing by themselves? That's beautiful because that really is what happens in the body. Nobody yes. knows what to do. And, yes. it's like, are they stopping? Are they catching up? So I love that. So when you see people come in, what are the different types of testing that you may look into or ask them to start talking about it with their medical doctor?
Yes, absolutely. So if we are concerned about the thyroid or if we think the thyroid can be improved, I believe so strongly in running a full thyroid panel. Many people will come to me with just a TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone, and I can explain how that triggers mm-hmm. all of the other hormones, but that's not enough to see the whole picture. It misses a lot of things, and even if it's off, it just doesn't tell us why it's off. It just says, hey, something's wrong, and we don't really know how to fix it. So what I run on my clients is a thyroid panel that includes the TSH, that's the one I mentioned, but also a T3 and T4 and reverse T3 and free T3 and free T4, and then the thyroid antibodies, TPO and TG. So would it be helpful to explain what those things are and how they work in the body, or should we just let listeners write that list down?
That's something to consider. And you have all that information on your website, like breaking that down a bit further. But you yes. said, why is it that they only ask for the TSH? Is it just that's all they want to know, or?
Yeah, well, I like to give medical doctors the benefit of the doubt. And the fact is that they're worrying about so many aspects of our health, and they only have a very short period of time. So when I'm sitting down with a client and we're working on thyroid, I might go through that section of their lab results for 15 whole minutes in the thyroid, or maybe 30 minutes. And a medical doctor just doesn't have time to do that because they also have to check your reflexes and check your throat and check your temperature and check your blood pressure and all this kind of stuff. And so what they're doing is a very cursory overview of, let's make sure anything's not super wrong that's going to cause a major issue tomorrow. And they do a great job of that. What I'm more looking at is, let's really dive in and make sure there are no issues tomorrow. And that just is a different, I think there's room for both.
Can you explain what symptomology, but what does it mean when you have Graves or Hashimoto's or hyperthyroid or hypothyroid? Because I think that gets really confusing to people.
Yes.
When they hear hypo or hyper, Graves as a diagnosed or Hashimoto's as a diagnosed.
Yes, absolutely. So we can think of, I help people remember this by imagine a child or a person who is hyper. They're fast. They're going all kinds of high speed. That means hyperthyroidism means that our thyroid is fast or overactive. And this could be not autoimmune related. You could have hyperthyroid for a number of reasons. Or if it's autoimmune, which means your body is attacking itself, autoimmune hyperthyroid, fast thyroid, is Graves' disease. And then the flip side is more common, hypothyroid, that's slow thyroid. So it does get a little bit confusing because When we have hypothyroid, the TSH, which is that number on the blood work, that's high. High TSH means low thyroid. So it's a little bit backwards in the way that people tend to think of it, but high TSH means low or hypothyroid. That could happen again for a number of reasons that are not autoimmune related, or if it is autoimmune related, that is called Hashimoto's, autoimmune hypothyroidism is Hashimoto's. So the symptomology that you asked for, I think of the slow, the more common, the hypothyroid, as everything is slow in the body. So digestion is slow. That means constipation. Hair growth is slow. That means you're losing hair. You're having thinning hair. You might be having thinning skin, things like that. Your brain is slow. So you might have brain fog. You might have depression. That's more of a slow versus anxiety is more of the fast, the hyperthyroid. Everything slow in your body is hypothyroid. And same thing with metabolism. Many people with hypothyroidism end up gaining weight or being unable to lose weight because their metabolism is slow. Hyper is just the opposite. So everything's fast. You might have diarrhea. You might have anxiety. You might be losing weight. You might be having temperature regulation issues on both sides, but slightly different patterns. But just think of fast for hyperthyroid and slow for hypothyroid.
That's amazing. And then it's not just the thyroid alone. Again, it's this complexity of the whole system that yes. can bring it to the point. So just addressing the one is not going to address the others. And that's why it's so complex. And you need to see someone like Megan to really dig deep and understand the complexities of that with the proper testing and to then address the other supporting actors in the yes. role of the thyroid. Right. Because yes. it's such a beautiful symphony of hormones and yes. the functions of the body. Right. Mm-hmm. So it is yes. very, very fascinating. So how do you come alongside someone to support them? Is it nutrition? Is it supplementation? How do you come into helping someone, say, with a thyroid issue?
Yes. I really wish for everyone's sake, including my own, that it were super simple. I would just say these two steps will fix your thyroid and everyone can do it. I would just put that out for free on the internet and no one would have a thyroid problem. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, I really do customize the approach for the individual. So it's not always as simple as two quick and easy steps, but there are some things that are going to be supportive no matter where you are on the spectrum of thyroid dysfunction. And I think of those things in three categories. One is food, and particularly foods that we want to add in. That might be nutrients that we want to add in supplement form or food form. And then another is stress, sleep, all of that kind of relationships, connection, all of the really deep, impactful spiritual things. And then finally, movement, which is a delicate balance for thyroid because we don't want to do too much and we don't want to do too little. So should I share a few ideas for each of those categories?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Of course, yes. As it relates to food and thyroid, I think that the primary things people are under consuming that are supportive of their thyroid are an abundance of micronutrients first. Micronutrients are vitamins, minerals, all kinds of things from whole foods that are plentiful if we're eating a varied, unprocessed diet. But unfortunately, and I eat processed food too, no one's perfect. This is not at all a shame game. But in 2023, many of us are eating a highly processed diet that has been stripped of those micronutrients, those vitamins and minerals. And so really helping my clients understand the benefit of getting a variety of whole foods, the benefit of getting different colors of produce on their plate, of trying to come up with some snacks that are unprocessed instead of just grabbing that mm-hmm. even energy bar or bag of chips or something like that. That can go a really long way in supporting the thyroid. And macronutrient wise, I think we're many of us are missing out on good quality protein. The average American might consume a couple of servings of processed red meat per day or something like that. That's not exactly the type of quality that I'm looking for, but we do need, especially as aging women, we do need good quality protein in higher doses than many of us are getting. So let me pause there and see what you think about that.
So it is. So, you know, the recommended daily value is, what is it at for the states?
So I think it's 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight, which ends up equaling about 0.4 grams per pound or something like that.
And it should be a gram per pound because it breaks down, because you're looking at muscle, you're looking at bone, you're looking at brain, you're looking at organ. And the more research that I do is that, oh my gosh, that is a lot of protein. One that you don't even have to be a bodybuilder, but it's so vital. And definitely as we age, they don't, you know, you just more of that simple food, and I'm not hungry. And it's hard to say, like, of course you may have to supplement with protein powder.
Yes.
But it is something that I've really become aware of, is like, wow, how are you going to get in that optimal? It's not like just coming by the skin of my teeth. It's like, no, it's, what is your optimal? You want optimal health. You want optimal brain health. You want optimal, this, even an optimal transition into your wisdomhood. I need some protein.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. So many of my clients tell me, I just can't sit there and eat another chicken breast. Like, my digestion feels off. I don't feel hungry for it. And that is in part because we lose our digestive enzyme capacity as we get older, unless we're supplementing with digestive enzymes. So for a lot of people, I'll help them restore their gut health so that they can digest the protein even better. And if not, just like you said, some good quality protein powders or essential amino acids, something to supplement. You can't be healthy, I think, just on protein powder alone. That's your only protein powder consumption. But having that as part of your consumption in order to get to that 1 gram per pound of body weight goal, that's fantastic.
And muscle loss is a huge factor for aging women, right?
Yes.
And that, again, you have to focus. And I know they probably talk about it or they don't talk about it. And understanding that, what exactly does it physically look like when you're trying to get optimal protein to maintain your muscle mass, so you don't have this deficiency starting and then you have muscle wasting or muscle loss, and then you run a risk of bone loss not having those micro minerals, but and then you're just increasing your fall risk. So it's so important, right?
Yes.
Goes back to, and then your thyroid can be affected by this lack of protein, and it's just a vicious circle that is created, and it's hard to pinpoint. And I think you sort of said that, because it is gut health sort of first.
Yes.
What comes first, the chicken or the egg, to helping for optimal health, even for the thyroid? And again, I think, as you've said, it's sort of stepping back and understanding that micro mineral or that micronutrient, the macronutrient, movement, and stress.
Right? Yes.
I love that.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
So you had said some really important things when we were beforehand. What are you not supposed to do when you have Graves? When you're diagnosed, right? What are some things you're not supposed to do when you have Graves or Hashimoto's that people may misunderstand?
Great question. I will start with Hashimoto's because it's far more common. The new research is showing that by the time that this generation is in there, I'm not sure if it was 80s or something like that, the younger generation currently is in their 80s, up to 40% of American women might get Hashimoto. So that is a very high statistic. And the things that I would say not to do when you have Hashimoto's are three primary ones. Number one, pains people to hear, but I'm just going to tell it like it is out of love. I really do believe people need to cut out gluten for a short period of time, potentially for a longer period of time, but at least be on a limited gluten diet if you have Hashimoto's. Gluten is not evil, but the gluten protein can closely mimic the thyroid protein. And if your body's in active state of attack of your thyroid and you're giving it more fuel to spur on that attack, it can just increase those antibodies and stimulate an overproduction of your immune system, which we don't want. So that's number one for Hashimoto's. Number two is excessive stress in any way. Stress is such a hard thing to fix. And so it's easier, even though gluten sounds hard to take out, it's easier to take out gluten than it is to manage stress. The good news is we don't have to take it out. That doesn't exist, a stress-free life. And that's not what I'm helping people aim for anyway. But we know if we're that person who loves marathon running or CrossFit and we're working 16 hours a day and we're undersleeping and we're carrying everyone else's emotional baggage on our shoulders and we're constantly going, that is just not helpful for Hashimoto's. And I find it almost impossible to get people out into remission for Hashimoto's until they take a little step in the right direction of managing their stress. So again, that looks different for every person that I work with. Some people, it's a meditation practice. Some people, they just need to carve out some free time. Some people, they need to spend more time with friends or hug more or whatever. It's just very individual. But stress is two. And then the third and last one is iodine, which we were briefly chatting about before. Iodine is a very supportive mineral in so many ways. Iodine has caused, or lack of iodine, deficiency of iodine has caused many issues in our society. But when someone has Hashimoto's, in order to get them into remission, there's a practice of pulling iodine out of the diet almost completely. So getting 60 micrograms or less per day for a short period of time, which is very low. You have to be aware of even some whole foods with iodine in it. That can spur the person to get into remission. And then we can work on gradually increasing back the iodine in a way that's safe and comfortable for them. That, though, just to give a caveat, that's not for everyone with a thyroid issue. In fact, iodine is supportive of many thyroid issues. It's just for Hashimoto's.
For diagnosed Hashimoto's. And yes. Again, this is the importance of seeking someone professionally to discuss these things. And it's because it really wreaks havoc on the rest of the body. And you really yes. are trying to heal yourself. And you want to do everything, even in the smallest micro aspect, to help your body heal, which is so amazing.
Yes. Yes.
So talk about Graves. What is that?
Yeah. So people think of Graves as one of the telltale signs, which is those bulging eyes. So if you have seen someone with Graves' disease and they have this symptom, it looks like they're on heightened alert all the time. Their eye sockets are very open. That's just one symptom. And in fact, about 50% of people with Graves' disease don't have that symptom. But Graves is an autoimmune condition or autoimmune attack on the thyroid that actually causes the opposite of Hashimoto's. So that causes hyperthyroidism. And these are all the fast things that we talked about. So you might feel anxiety, insomnia, weight loss, things like that. In general, the steps are going to be the same except the iodine. So the stress management is huge for this one, including physical stress. So that means the toxins that we come into contact with, either breathing, putting on our skin, ingesting, something like that, exercise, sleep, all of that. I'm really, really supporting someone's body in feeling comfortable in that parasympathetic state, which is that rest and digest, that relaxation side, which is very hard for patients with Graves' disease. And then the dietary steps are very similar. So making sure we have an abundance of those phytonutrients, those micronutrients, still making sure we have protein, still making sure that our fat, I don't think I said that one before, but we want our fat quality to be really on point when we have any autoimmune condition, because the fats that most of us consume in the standard American diet are omega-6. Those are pro-inflammatory, and those are just going to heighten the autoimmune response even more. But we want those soothing, those omega-3 fatty acids, which will slow down that inflammation response.
That is very, very fascinating. So to circle back to your new research study that you have been studying, do you think the upcoming storm for women who are, you're saying women who are now in their 20s and 30s, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that because of this toxicity that is going to be creating an autoimmune issue, and the autoimmune issue will can exasperate into Hashimoto's?
So I wish I knew. I don't think anyone knows completely. There are lots of different theories, and I tend to believe all of them. I don't think it's one factor that's causing this increase. I think it's multifactorial. And one is the presence of leaky gut in our society. Right now, up to 70% of American adults at some point will have leaky gut, which is called intestinal, the official name is intestinal permeability. And this basically means our gut lining is getting damaged and letting things into the bloodstream that shouldn't be in there. And then if my gut lining is damaged and I eat broccoli, chunk of broccoli might get into my bloodstream, and my immune system attacks that because broccoli is not supposed to be in the blood. And so that creates an immune response that's not supposed to be there. I believe over and over and over having that happen can contribute to autoimmunity. So Alessio Fasano and many other leading practitioners, this is their theory of leaky gut leads to autoimmune issues. I think also, like you said, the abundance of toxins that we come into contact with these days, whether it's things that we can't even really control, like breathing pollution or something like that. There are lots of toxins in our water supply. There are toxins in almost everything that we put onto our skin and in our houses. And unfortunately, even in our food, even if you're doing your best to choose good quality food and go to the grocery store instead of the fast food store, there are still toxins in there. So we don't have to be perfect on any of these things, but that is also a factor. Many people believe stress. There are just lots of theories, but I believe them all.
I think that that touched on a huge topic that you sort of, we talk about, but we don't talk about, and people don't want to face the elephant in the room, which is leaky gut, right?
Yeah.
And it's so hard, and gut health and everything starts in the gut. And it's just one of those things is just hard to, the cart before the horse, right? In addressing many issues like autoimmune or thyroidism and brain health, the mental health.
Yes.
You find everything comes back to gut.
I find almost everything comes back to gut. Yes. And at least we can link it in some way. And the really cool thing in my mind, I'm a bit of a nerd in this way, but when I start thinking about the physical connections in the body, the largest cranial nerve in our body goes between our brain and our gut. That's the vagus nerve, some people may have heard of. And this is sending messages constantly between the brain and the gut. So the gut health, if the gut health is off, if things are not good down there, it's sending messages to the brain. Oh no, alert, 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 something's in trouble. And that manifests in terms of anxiety, poor mental health, brain fog, insomnia, just any kind of brain issue that you can think of could start in the gut, but also vice versa. Many of us are struggling with mental health challenges that we weren't hundreds of years ago because of overstimulation and things like that. And that's sending messages down to the gut that says, oh my gosh, things are not good in here. So that slows the production of many hormones like serotonin, serotonin neurotransmitters like serotonin and things like that, that are designed to keep us feeling happy and vibrant and good, that can get really altered with this brain gut connection. So I think short answer to your question, I find yes, almost everything begins in the gut.
That is so true. Right? Like we get so hyper-focused as practitioners as like, oh, I really need to, you need to, you know, put out the fire here and put out the fire here. And same as people when they're looking at their health, I need to put out the fire. I need to put out the fire. But again, we all need to come back to understanding that period. And if that's good, then put it, then moving out and putting out the fires elsewhere in the body, which is incredible.
Yes.
And I love that you're so passionate about so many things. I think it's just like, oh, I love it. It's so good because as a practitioner, understanding people from different levels and having knowledge of many things, like even when you're looking at you with even adrenal health, cardiovascular health, bone health, brain health, all these different things, you've studied it and you've seen people. And I think it's amazing. You wrote a book about Start Here, 7 Easy Diet Free Steps. What is that? It can't be diet free.
Well, that's true. You can't be diet free. I don't recommend being diet free in the way that you and I are now saying it, but in the way that we're bombarded by fad diets and miracle diets and diet cures and all of that stuff. I strongly believe there will never be a magic fix the way that people are looking for it. I know how tempting it is to find the one thing. I remember when I was, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7, my dad literally ordered cases of grapefruit juice. Like a truck showed up to our house with so much grapefruit juice, you can't even imagine. And that was because he read somewhere that if you just drink grapefruit juice before everything else you eat, that everything in life will be solved. You'll lose weight and you won't have issues and all of this kind of stuff. And unfortunately, it's just never that simple as one specific thing will fix everything. So when I wrote the book, which I think was 2015, many years ago, I wanted to give people, just like it says, a way to start. And if you look at the chapter titles for the book, almost everything in those chapter titles, people will know. No one listening to this podcast has not heard that drinking water is a good thing. But what I do in the book is tell people why they would benefit from drinking water, which a lot of people don't know, all the benefits they can experience, and then teach them actually how to incorporate that. Same thing with eating more vegetables and moderating our sugar intake and working on our self-talk and our emotional health. All of those kinds of things are in there. Yes.
So from 2015, Megan, to 2023, what do you find that you've really hyper-focused on that make the biggest difference?
Oh, wow. That's such an interesting question. Do you mean in my practice? Like,
I think in your practice, for what you see in women, the women that you see, or the men and women, sorry, that you see, what in that core value that you've created in 2015, what have you seen change in how you approach issues and or that you have found to be the most interesting change in with the people that are brought to you? Does that make sense?
That yes, it does. And I love it. I could probably give you 89 different answers, but the one that's coming up for me is that the foundations are still the same. The water and the vegetables, those are still the same, but I have doubled, tripled, quadrupled 100 times down on the impact of stress. I used to have people come to me in 2015 and say, oh no, I don't want to worry about stress. I just want to talk about whether zucchini is healthier than a cucumber. And I would say, okay, well, let's talk about why zucchini or cucumber or whatever. I'm using a silly example, but I used to listen to what they said. And now I know that every single person of the many thousands that have come my way, they're all dealing with stress in some way. And some of us deal with it really well. Not us. That's not me. I don't naturally deal with it well. I need to teach myself and work on myself in order to deal with it well. But some of us need some extra help. And if we shove that under the rug, it honestly doesn't matter how little sugar you're eating or how whatever you're eating, you can't truly fix yourself on the surface. We've got to go deep inside, even if it's something like a thyroid condition or something that feels unrelated to what people will say is that fluffy stuff. I think the fluffy stuff is the real stuff. And so I really double down on all of that.
I love that. I love that. Because when you were talking about the difference between the cucumber and the zucchini, I'm sitting back going, their indecisiveness is killing them. It doesn't
matter. Yes, that's right.
And again, I'm very much this person of when I see or I'm speaking to someone and I'm listening to the tone, and I'm listening to how they speak and how things are approached. And they're not addressing the stress or just shoving it down is, to me, one of the biggest reasons why you have digestive issues. So yes. It's an emotional component, and you can't leave the fluffy stuff out. It's like, are you speaking? Like, I love thyroidism in that aspect because, yes, functionally, you can have lots of things, reasons why there's things that are going on. But if with thyroid, are they speaking their voice? Are they expressing themselves?
Are they
mute?
And yes,
the fluffy stuff is very interesting. It's not that I can go into it with them, but it is this bringing it forward and saying, are you expressing yourself enough? Are you singing? Are you finding joy? And all of those, doesn't matter how many zucchinis and cucumbers you eat, right?
Yes.
If you're just shoving your stress down, then it's not going to support the health of the body, right? And I think that's very fascinating that you're like, I'm triple downing. It's just so important, right?
Yes, I am.
I think it's so, it is. And again, it's no right way or wrong way to address it. It's just this acknowledgement. So do you have people build a tool belt for themselves? Because you can't get out of stress in life. You need stress to live. But
yes.
Do you have them build a tool belt for themselves? And if so, what are three things you have them put inside of their tool belt to help them with that stress daily?
Yes, I do think the tool belt looks different for everyone. So an example, I'm thinking of a client who I tried to convince her otherwise, which is never the thing that you should do as a practitioner. But when she was saying to me many years ago, all I need to do is like go to more parties, go out more. And I was seeing her lifestyle through my lens. I was thinking, oh my goodness, she's already working in this very intense job. She's going to exercise classes. She's doing all this stuff. No, she doesn't need to go to parties more. She needs to retreat more. But that was me. I am the one who finds peace and solitude and being alone. That's where I recharge as an introvert. She is the most genuine extrovert ever. So her going to parties, even though it sounds terrible to me, that was very restorative for her. Yeah. So it does look different for every person. But I think to answer your question with the three things, number one will be a breathing practice of some sort for everybody. So many people now are starting to hear breathing exercises, which is amazing because it does strengthen or tone that vagus nerve that we were talking about between the gut and the brain. For some people, that will be a deep meditation practice. For others, I really like 4-7-8 breathing, which is in for 4, hold for 7, out for 8. Even my most non-woo-woo corporate executives, they can understand a study that I send them that says, look, this breathing pattern lowers your blood pressure, lowers your blood sugar, lowers your heart rate, reduces risk of coronary artery disease, all kinds of things like that. And they say, okay, I still think it's weird, but I'm going to do it. And then they start loving it and building it into their day more frequently. Mm-hmm. So breathing will definitely be one. I think two will be movement of some kind. And again, for some people, that's walking, dancing, yoga, swimming, anything. I really believe in that restorative activity. And I'm someone who loves burpees and running and all that stuff. But I know my body doesn't love too much of that. I have to do that. I get to do that in moderation and really focus on the restorative movement as well, which is so good for body, mind, and soul. And then I think third, if I really had to define a toolbox that would apply to almost everyone, would be some form of release. So that might mean journaling. I really resisted journaling for a while, but now I love it to the core. It might mean praying. It might mean talking to a friend, counselor, therapist. Some way of getting that stuff out and off of our shoulders is very helpful.
I love that. I think that is so amazing. And it just is so important. Those are really easy things to do, but not easy to throw into your schedule. And it is a discipline Yes. that needs to be created. And I love that. I love that. What, there's so much to talk about and I just love it. What is on your heart's desire right now? What are you working on? What has been like, wow, I need to understand that better.
Oh, that's a great question. I am not sure if I'm going to answer it in the way that you intend, but when you say,
it's what is in your heart's desire as a person in life or as a practitioner? What is really like, what are you doing? That was the question.
Okay, great. Well, then I'm going to answer it just as I initially was going to. I have been in a deep reflection over the past, I would call it several months, and I'm coming up on my 10-year anniversary of being in business. And I've always said to everyone, I never want to grow my team. I do have people helping me with my podcast and social media and things like that, but I never want to grow my team to have other people in my business doing the nutrition work because I love it so much. And that is true. I love it so much. And I love the interaction so deeply with my clients. But I realized that that was fear speaking, fear of growing my business. It was ego speaking, that I don't think anyone else can do it as well as I can. And it was a lot of limiting beliefs that were holding me back. And I always many times have dipped into that, almost going to go to burnout. And because I've been there before, I'm so aware of when my body is doing that, that I know something needs to change. And that's a gift I think I've created from my struggles in the past, that I know and I can catch it before it happens. But with all those things coming together and the realizations, I realized, cool, I get to expand my team. And so I've been doing that recently. It's been so much fun, such a joy to work with other people and now be able to serve more people in my business, more clients. And I realized that all my fears were just that. They were fears that I had made up in my head. So whether someone listening can relate to that exact story or not, I hope that helps them reflect on whatever's holding them back and maybe realize that it is just in our heads.
I love that, Megan. That's so perfect because it is a lot of times, no matter what it is, what challenges faces before us, right? How are we to become a better person? How are we going to become what we are called to be? And how are we going to move into the next season of our lives is to face fear and overcome it.
Yes.
And I love that, Megan. And congratulations in that breakthrough.
Thank you.
And I think it's wonderful. It'll be very, the whole new journey ahead of you. And I think it's absolutely amazing.
Yes. Thank you.
To finish today, what is one word of wisdom, or like not one word, but what is the word of wisdom that you would like to share?
Oh, that's such another great question. You have ones that I have not been asked before, which I so appreciate. I'll share again what comes to mind, which is I set a word for every year for myself. Mm-hmm. I love this practice. I really think about it deeply. In fact, I go to something called the Getaway House, which is available in many areas. I have no affiliation with them, but it's like a little cabin in the middle of nowhere. I go for one day at the end of the year and I set my intentions and goals and word for the next year. And this year, the word was euthymia, which is a word that I had not heard of before. But basically it means flowing like a river with gratitude and cheerfulness into the next step. And for me, that word has served me so well this year. I have a picture of a river right over there, actually, that reminds me of this, that my job is not to over-engineer everything about my health, my business, my life, my relationships. My job is to flow like a river with gratitude and cheerfulness and just kind of appreciate what's around me. So it's been a challenge, but it's been a really great one for me.
I love that. I love that. And you have your getaway booked, do you, for your 2024?
I do.
Yes. I love that. And
it's just in a few weeks.
I love that. I love that you take the time as a practitioner as well and take care of your self-care aspect.
Yes.
Even from a personal aspect, but even from a business goal aspect. And honestly, this time has been incredible today. And I thank you so much for coming on the show, because a lot of things are so important. A lot of it's foundational, but again, I think you've really emphasized the importance of that foundation. And I appreciate that. I appreciate your compassion for your clients, and I appreciate that you have the willingness to expand and grow even further than what you thought. So I think that's amazing.
Thank you so much for offering the space today and for your amazing partnership and questions. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you. Everything about Megan will be on the podcast. And I thank you again. Have yourself an amazing day today, and thank you for joining.